You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Wood.
And I'm Jennifer Connor.
From Equestrian Businesswomen, and you're listening to Equestrian B2B, the podcast that brings together industry leaders, entrepreneurs, and equestrians for conversations about how they build and sustain a successful business.
On today's show, we talk to Laura Conaway about the equine insurance industry and how she cultivates a collaborative environment with flexibility.
Laura Conaway became an insurance agent in 1990. She founded Conaway & Associates Equine Insurance Services, Inc. in 1992. Conaway & Associates specializes in insuring horses and horse farms in the United States, Canada, and Europe. The agency has grown to one of the largest insurance agencies of its kind in the United States. Laura competes in show jumping up to the Grand Prix level nationally. She is also a competitive runner, participating in road races at distances ranging from 5K to marathon, including qualifying for and competing in the Boston Marathon.
Laura is a member of the United States Equestrian Federation, United States Hunter Jumper Association, United States Dressage Federation, and Little Rock Roadrunners. She is a supporter of the Hooved Animal Humane Society, Pulaski County Humane Society, and she is an animal rescuer herself. Laura is also a sponsor of special event horse shows, including those that benefit Special Olympics and cancer research. Laura and her husband, John Nile, a farmer from Bisco, Arkansas, live on a farm next to Pinnacle Mountain with their dogs, horses, and cats.
Hey, Equestrian B2B podcast listeners, ready to level up your biz?
Ride Every Stride specializes in tailoring brand identities for equestrian businesses, from logo development, essential stable accessories, and custom product branding to exclusive awards, VIP event must-haves, and chic apparel. They've got you covered.
Visit rideeverystride.com. Use code B2B15, that's B2B15, at checkout for an exclusive 15% discount.
Elevate your brand with Ride Every Stride, supporting women in business and equestrian excellence.
Hi, Laura. It's so good to have you here with us today. We're excited to talk to you about kind of your path and creating your business, you know, such a successful business that you have. So we look forward to speaking with you.
Thank you.
And so just to kind of start, Laura, can you give us a little background on kind of how you got involved with horses? I know you've been riding since you were a kid, and kind of how did you get down the path to becoming an insurance agent?
Yes, I have been riding for decades now. And I became an insurance agent because, one, I was always drawn to horses and knew I needed to earn a living. But I also did not feel like I could be a professional rider. So I was looking for something on the outskirts of the horse industry so that I could earn a living and stay involved with horses myself. I saw that riders needed somebody that was their contemporary, that they could talk to, ask difficult questions, ask stupid questions, whatever they didn't know about. They didn't need to feel like they should know. They could just ask somebody that was their friend or contemporary, so that I could help them out and be accountable to them.
Right. And when did you kind of make that decision? Was it after college or after you had worked in other jobs?
I had worked in another job. I had a 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. job that didn't give me much time to ride. And, you know, it wasn't horse talk. It wasn't horse friendly. And so I sought out a way that I could hopefully at least be involved with talking about horses and eventually be able to support myself riding horses.
So you know, and we can talk a little bit more about this, but I know, you know, you've bred your own horses and all of that. But before you started Conaway and Associates, had you owned any horses and were you able to ride at all?
I was able to ride, and I would find ways like to leave, you know, Friday after work and go and show for 2 days and come home Sunday.
Yeah.
And I actually had, I even had a Grand Prix horse that I had purchased as a 7-year-old. It was a thoroughbred off the track, and I had developed him up to a Grand Prix horse. So I actually had even jumped in a Grand Prix.
Oh, cool.
That's awesome.
And what was the process of becoming an agent? Like, what do you have to do in order to become licensed and be official?
Yes. When you sell horse insurance, you're actually considered a property and casualty agent.
Okay.
So you do have to get your property and casualty license. And that's the, you get licensed in the state that you reside in. And you have to be licensed in every other state you work in.
Okay.
So like, for instance, for our agency, we have, I'm personally licensed in 48 states and DC. And then our company is licensed in 48 states and DC. Once that happens, we add our employees to our company license, and then that license allows them to write in the 48 states and DC.
Okay, that's nice. So you're the one who had to go through all that trouble first so that your employees didn't have to?
Right. It's cumbersome. And we have spreadsheets and, you know, licenses renew at all different times. And it's something definitely to keep up with.
Right.
So, Laura, I actually have my insurance license, my property and casualty. I had a friend a few years ago talk me into it in 2019, like right before COVID. I feel like I might have been one of the first people with COVID because I was so ill for like 2 months before like COVID hit while I was taking this course. But I took the course, and it, in New York at the time, you had to be in person for the course. And Yeah, they didn't do it online. And that switched quite quickly after COVID hit and everything had to change. But it is, the other day, I just got a notice that I have to start the process of doing my continuing education to keep my license up. And I was like, I feel like I just did this again.
Yes.
It's a lot to keep track of. And it, to me, I did a lot of racing in a lot of different states. And when I worked at the breeding farm, I had to make sure that the owner was licensed in all the states. So it's very similar to it. It's like every year, every 2 years, this state is completely different. So I feel your pain on that.
Yeah, you are well versed in this. Yes. And you need a spreadsheet and you need reminders and and all of that. There's one thing, I have a list of things I have to do every month, and one of them is check on that.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, definitely.
And I have to mark that off my calendar every single month. Did I do that? Yes.
Yeah. I'm glad that I just kind of stick to New York because I couldn't imagine having to go through. And it's crazy because some states there's reciprocity, and then there's some states that are like, no. So it's a process for sure. Laura, you started out working at an insurance agency before you started your own? Yeah.
I sure did. And I thought out a really top hunter jumper agency, and luckily they took me on so I could be an agent for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really good to work for them and to learn some about the business before I jumped out on my own.
Yeah, I feel like I went through the course for the property and casualty, and I'm not sure that it really prepared me for the horse side of the industry.
Right. There's not a lot that transfers. Just some of the basic theory, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at what point did you decide that you were ready to go on your own and open up your own business?
You know, it was pretty soon after that, maybe a year and a half.
Wow.
I started my own agency because I just wanted more control over how my customers were treated.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And what did that business look like initially? Were you just by yourself? Did you have somebody else that worked with you?
I was by myself. And then fairly soon after, I hired my first employee, who is Margaret Ellis. And then she worked with me for several years and then went on maternity leave. She had children and stayed away for years. And we recently hired her back maybe 4 years ago.
Oh, that's cool.
So she works for us again. Yeah. She's awesome. Wonderful. Yeah.
And you started your agency 32 years ago, right?
Yes. 92.
Wow.
Actually, I think it's June of 92. So I think it's exactly 32 years ago.
And what did that leap of faith take for you in order to, you know, leave a company and go on your own and be responsible for everything?
You know, it was a lot to take on, you know, because you have, you know, insurance policies to buy. You have to think about your own health care. You have to think about, you know, all these basic things, you know, accounting and all of that. So it's just best probably not to think about all at one time and just think about what you need to do the next 15 days or 10 days.
Did you ever get more than just property and casualty? Did you go into life insurance or the health side of things?
No, I never went into any of the other types of insurance. And in fact, we are completely specialized in that we only insure horses, horse farms, and liability of horse-related things. The horse farms do encompass farm vehicles, mm-hmm. but we do not do anything outside of something that is horse-related.
Oh, interesting. I've been considering getting my life insurance agent, and I'm just not sure if it's something that I need to do. I was like, I just always like it as like a backup plan. Like, I think if you go through it and you have it, because it's not my primary source of income at all. I just kind of am a person that refers a lot of business to an agency, and that's how it works for me. But I don't know. I've considered it, but it seems like it's kind of tough, and it's a lot for I don't know what reason.
Yeah. You know, I've always been one that I want to stay within my specialty zone, and mm-hmm. I want to know everything about my specialty zone, and I want to keep doing what I do well. I don't want to venture out, like even into the dog insurance. Oh, I want to stay exactly where I know all the ins and outs and do my one thing super well.
Yeah. And you mentioned before, you know, you wanted to focus on the customer experience and how you could help your customers. Can you talk a little bit about what kind of is the underlying principles of your agency and how you work with customers?
Yeah, you know, our whole team is just super customer oriented, and anyone that calls in or emails, I feel like our whole team gives them as much information and as much concentration as needed for that individual. And I think treating people very fairly, regardless of the amount of business they send you to you, and regardless about any other aspects, but each individual person deserves exactly your full attention and as much research as you need to do with the different companies in order to give them the product that best suits them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just so individual based from our agency that, you know, my hope is that we don't turn anybody away that could possibly have a policy or get some coverage that would really help them.
Right. And you work with multiple underwriters for that?
Right. We actually have appointments with six companies We are actively riding with 5 of them.
Okay. Yeah, sometimes I feel like people don't understand what's behind the insurance industry. They don't understand that there are underwriters behind you and how that exactly works. Can you just give like a quick little idea of how that kind of flows?
Yeah, because I think that you're right. I think a lot of people don't have an idea. They think that it stops maybe where we are.
Yes.
And I consider our job is more information gathering from the customer and giving information to the customer about what is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Once we gather the information, depending on the customer's needs, we can present it to different carriers to see what they're able to offer, because each carrier has underwriters, like you said, and the underwriters are the ones that accept the business or reject the business, maybe put restrictions on the business of writing the policy, and they can tell us what is possible for that piece of business, what exceptions maybe are going to be placed on it. They accept values, like if somebody wants a higher value than the purchase price, they would review that value for acceptance, or they might decline it. And it's important to have more than one carrier, because each carrier has different guidelines that they go by. One carrier might have a better understanding of a certain value, or they might not consider a certain medical issue as dire as maybe another carrier does.
Okay.
So it starts with us, where we gather the information, then we present it based on what the customer is looking for, present it to the different carriers and get feedback from each one, and then can go back to the customer and let them know what's possible.
Mm. I think that's so important, because if you're with an agency that only works with one underwriter, you have to take it or leave it, right?
That's right. And sometimes, you know, different carriers are looking to get more business in a certain area, and they'll give special discounts, or maybe they'll comp something. They'll often give special consideration.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think some of it too has to do with maybe some of the mix of the horses that you're presenting to them as well. Is that true? Like, I'll tell you, we do a lot with standard breds, and like nothing with thoroughbreds. And the underwriters love standard breds because they're very resilient horses.
That's good to know. We don't do any standard breds, so we need to send anyone that call us to you.
Yeah. And they do, because they are. And the thoroughbreds, they're just, for us, they're just a nightmare, because they're such high value and so much going on that we don't even like to touch them in the racing world.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. In the racing world, we actually do not ride any racing stock, just because it's not in our specialty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we feel like if a racing person comes to us, they should probably go with someone. We would give them the name of someone else to talk to, because someone else could talk the talk better and knows the ins and outs of the racing a lot more. And we would not be able to do as good a job as they, Sterling Thompson, I think. They do a lot of racing stock for thoroughbreds.
Mm-hmm.
And they know how to look everything up, and we would be pretty stuck if they don't have a USCF number. So we'd be like, oh my gosh, how do we do that?
Yeah. I have a friend who works at another company, and one time she was like, these people want something done with a standard bread. I don't know how to find it anywhere.
Well, she called the right person.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yep. it was really funny. But, you know, I think people need to understand too, like, I have ponies, I have a thoroughbred, and I have 2 ponies, and the 2 ponies are with a different carrier than my thoroughbred is, because, you know, what was suitable for those horses. And people should understand that when they are insuring horses, they could have multiple carriers depending on that horse and the situation and the cost and what could be wrong with it.
Mm.
You're right. And not only that, the same customer might have multiple policies with the same company.
Yep.
Because of the policy protection that comes with a with an insurance policy. You know, if you add a horse in the middle, a lot of the time you lose some of your back-end policy protection. So you might have three policies that are different dates of renewal, but it's more protective for the customer.
Hmm. And I think it just goes to show that people need to do their homework when they're looking for an agency to make sure that they specialize in the type of horse or the discipline that they do so that, you know, they have somebody who's educated and knows how to do it.
I agree. Yes. And if they have a standard bred, we know where to call now.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
That's what we do. We connect people and help yeah. them.
Absolutely.
And when you kind of, after you got started and you were growing and starting to hire employees, how did that path go? Was it pretty steady path of growth and adding employees as you needed them, or has it been a little up and down through the decades of your business?
You know, it's just been pretty steady because, you know, luckily in insurance, you do have renewals, which come up each year. And so you just build slowly on those renewals. So it's a nice steady growth. And unlike most other companies, people will say, well, what's your busy season? And we're like, well, we kind of stay the same. You know, we're always doing something, always processing something. And we don't really, sure, everybody will say, well, yes, we're busier December, January, February, and March. But it's not like we really have a slow season that, you know, like a lot of companies have are very seasonal. And of course, we're not. So it is just a steady growth. And luckily, as you have more renewals, and if you're doing a good job, hopefully you get some more referrals. So as you build the renewals, hopefully the referral business builds and it's more exponential.
Mm-hmm. When you started out, was that your expectation to either have the company as big as it is or have as many employees as you do? Did you meet the goals that you set for yourself?
You know, I guess I'm not really a goal-oriented person. I'm more of a what's in front of me type person.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really set any growth goals. I've more just worked on focusing on my daily work and just trying to make the customer experience, just fine-tuning that, you know, on an ongoing basis.
Yeah.
You know, finding better ways to reach our customers, fine-tuning how we're able to educate them if they have questions, things like that.
Yeah. And because of that, the growth came out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would hope so. You know, you just hope if you do a good job, then people refer their friend to you. Because it's a leap of faith when somebody refers their friend. They're hoping that their friend has a good experience.
Right.
And so by someone referring their friend, it's a big responsibility that I feel like it's a big responsibility because I don't want to let down two people. I want to do my very best job for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that the friend is, so that our customer is super happy that she referred the friend and is proud that she did. And also that the friend has a really good experience and hopefully will want to refer another friend.
Well, I think that's working because I see your name mentioned a lot, especially on Facebook
you.
Of referrals. So I see it a lot.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, we love what we do. We love what we do. When I'm thinking about what I'm doing the next day, I'm, you know, always excited when it's Monday because it's like, okay, I get to have my little team here.
And, you know, talking a little bit more about the customer service side of things, how did you go about instilling your values in your employees? Was it a gradual thing, or do you have like specific training and ways of doing things? And was it a certain type of person that you were looking for that you knew would work well with what with the type of company you wanted to have?
Yeah, I think that we would certainly attract a certain type of person. And it's an environment that just builds on itself because everybody is so focused on it that it's not something that we really have to remind people, but mm-hmm. we certainly have very strict protocol. Mm-hmm. And the protocol, you know, must be followed every single time. But that does not, you can't instill somebody empathy and good phone skills. I mean, mm-hmm. that just has to be that person.
Right.
And we've been very lucky to find those people. And I think those people have gravitated towards us because, you know, they like this environment too.
Right.
And our employees actually have a lot to give us a lot of feedback. My sister and I run the company together. My sister, Carolyn Tanner, we run it together. But the employees, whenever they run into something, they say that maybe we could do it this way, or maybe, you know, we could send this out and this would help. Mm-hmm. But they have a lot of empathy. They're extremely smart. And we learn as much from them as probably now as they learn from us.
Mm. And I imagine, you know, once you get past the initial policy and getting everything set up, outside of the annual renewals, the calls that you're fielding are kind of people in crisis sometimes, you know, if their horse is injured or sick or, and they don't know what to do, or they don't know what's covered. Like I would feel that also takes a certain kind of person who understands that situation and can talk to people, you know, when they're a little distraught over what's happening.
Yes, most definitely. Most definitely. And, you know, our office is always, you know, we're open 9 to 5, but we always have an agent on call after hours and on weekends, just because of those things. You know, we have set the policy up and we feel very needed when the policy needs to be used. Mm-hmm. And that's when we really need to come into effect, is when the policy needs to be used. We need to be there so that we can get them with the right adjusters, you know, field any questions they have and reassure them. And, you know, a lot of the time they can't find the policy, so we can get it to them right away.
Right.
We have really good technology, like I'm sure everybody does, but, you know, I can look everything up on my phone and, you know, we make sure that we're hopefully there for them when they need us because they've gone to us to purchase this.
Right.
Yeah. And nobody reads their policy. And if they do, they don't understand it a lot of times. And I get a lot of questions about it. Like, hey, what does this even mean? And then also, if they don't take the proper steps, then they could do something wrong and it could jeopardize what's going to happen.
Right. You are so right. And it's our responsibility to do a lot. And it's also the customer's responsibility to do certain things as well. And it's important for them to know that they do have a responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Before
it is a legal
crisis happens.
And, well, and even during a crisis, a legal contract.
Yeah.
And by the legal contract, they have to hold up their end of the deal and the company has to hold up their end of the deal.
Right.
Yeah, that's why I like when you were talking about having certain processes that need to be followed every time, because it's critical. People just don't necessarily understand how critical it is to make sure that every T is crossed, I is dotted, and it's going the right way.
Mm. Right, yeah.
And horses don't get sick between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m.
Like never.
Never.
And the only thing I can think of is sometimes when I'll get a call at 2 a.m., I think, well, I'm glad I'm not the vet that's going out there.
Yeah, at least you can stay in bed and work on your phone.
Yeah. And I know that that sounds terrible. Sometimes you're like, well, I can't go back to bed, but yeah, right. Yeah. I'm really sorry that happened.
Well, one of my friends does her insurance through me, and she also has a couple of my horses in training. And whenever she calls, I'm like, is everything okay? Like, I don't know what it's going to be about. Is it about your horse, my horse, insurance, whatever? Most of the time it's fine. And she just wants to give me an update, but I'm always like in a panic mode, especially if I miss the call. I'm like, oh no, what happened?
Yeah.
Tell her she's supposed to text first and be like, I'm calling with a good thing. Or
yeah.
A bad thing.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Cause yeah. Hit panic mode. I should probably not do that. Keep them everybody separate. Mm-hmm. Oh, have you seen significant changes in the industry over the last 30 years, 30 plus years?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a very dynamic industry. Very dynamic. Mm-hmm. There are always product changes. And you just like you see, every company is looking to gain some customers with a little bit of a different angle, which is good because it gives the customers choices. But it's very dynamic. And, you know, we see changes, you know, we are always updating each employee has a book, and you think the book is updated, and then the next day it's not. You're like, we need to change this. We need to change that.
Yeah. And sometimes when we're doing when we're looking through it and we do have a change, or the product is changed and then we change it, the owners are like, wait a minute, I'm not with this company, I'm with that company. And you're like, but they changed. And so, you know, we're helping you out and we're going to do this and this. And they hit panic for a minute and then they're like, oh, okay. I'm like, that's like my job. I'm making sure you're covered the right way.
Yeah.
And would you say, this is just an opinion, not a fact, but I feel like the human healthcare insurance industry, it's becoming a lot harder to get good insurance and to get coverage for the things that you need and to be able to afford it. Do you feel like the horse industry has kind of gone that way as well? Or do you think it's still in a good situation and you're able to get what you need?
My opinion is we're in a very good situation. Mm-hmm. I think most customers can get what they need. They might have to shop around a little bit, but they can get the product that they need. If they can't get the exact product they need, they can get close. But the costs have not increased that much. There is a little bit of a paring down with some sublimits on the medical side and things of that nature. Because the insurance carriers, most of them don't want to pay for 3 MRIs. They might pay for 2, but the third one they think should be on maybe the customer. But there is some shifting, but for the most part, the companies are really trying to give the customers a good product that hopefully is beneficial to both the company and the customer, because you can't have it where the company loses so much money that you do have to understand both sides.
Right. Like homeowners insurance in Florida.
That's a whole different subject. That one is. There is no way to say that is not tough.
Oh, it's terrible.
I also think too, it's a little bit different for the horses because of the mortality and the major medical policies that are there. It's not just medical,
right,
for the horses.
Right, right. And the mortality side has not changed that much. You know, there is a little tightening going on a little bit on the wobbler syndrome with all the neck issues. You know, they're asking for maybe a little bit of tightening on that. Mm-hmm. for the full mortality end, but wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah. Definitely see a little bit, but yeah, I haven't been doing it that long, but it's not significant, like health insurance for humans.
Right.
Laura, how do you approach people who a lot of times they don't understand it, right? That it's especially like horse dads or horse moms, they're not really horsey and they come to you and they want to insure. How do you talk them through it? Because I feel like a lot of times people are trying to make it like human medical insurance or their dog and cat insurance. And, you know, I think that it takes some explaining to them. How do you explain that?
Yeah, it does take some explaining. And I think that the first step is to make sure that they understand that it's term insurance. It's not like healthcare or any other kind of insurance you're going to buy. You're buying a one-year policy. The policy has protection built into it in case something happens to the horse during that policy period, but it goes from one day of the year to another day of the year the next year. It's not ongoing after that unless you renew the policy. And so I think that, first of all, that is very important. And then to find out exactly how they're using the horse's age, and to give them quotes with very descriptive medical options so that they can look through it and then call you with questions once they've looked at it so that you can explain the differences between each product to them.
Yeah, I think that's good. Because I've had a couple of, especially dads, be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, we just need to do this. And I'm like, we want to make sure it's
right.
Yeah,
you know, and it is a legal document. You have to make sure it's right. And I think that if they can grasp the fact that it's term insurance, then they're going to be more cognizant of what goes on and the renewal process and just the overall flow of how things happen there.
Mm-hmm. And looking at the industry now, do you feel like the equine insurance side is becoming saturated, or do you think it's still a good, viable career choice for people who are interested in it?
You know, I think it's a good, viable career choice. Mm-hmm. And I think we always need well-informed and reliable agents that know what they're selling and are good at educating their customers. It's not just about writing a policy. It's if you have a very good, well-informed agent, it's a good learning process. And I think we always need more of those.
Right. And what's kind of the path for getting into it and, you know, finding out if the career would suit you?
I would recommend having somebody. Insurance has a whole different language, and it has a lot of, I would say, theory and, you know, things follow one another. And it's very important to learn the language and to know the concepts. Because, you know, once you learn the concepts, you can figure out why this is happening and what needs to happen at this point and things like that. So I would recommend someone work for a general property and casualty agency, figure out the concepts of insurance, the terminology, get their feet wet talking to people about what's available, what restrictions might occur to different policies. And then if they're comfortable with working in the insurance industry, because it is, you're talking about a lot of money that you put on a policy that when something happens, that individual is looking, if that horse dies, that individual is looking to make sure that they're reimbursed.
Right.
So there's a lot of responsibility. And I think that if the individual is up for that and has worked for another agency, an open PNC agency, then they should start into it.
What kind of roles are available to people to get started in it? Like answering phones, being a secretary, or is there something else that they could do to get them their feet wet in it?
I would think they'd need to be a licensed agent and work in that industry and sell insurance, learn how to do a homeowner's policy, learn how to sell an auto policy, you know, because we do that all, you know, every day. We insure houses with the farms, and we insure vehicles with the farms. So that is very, very usable information. And then the horses, you know, you learn that horse side of it later on. Mm-hmm. But the property side with the homes and the auto, you would be using that all the time anyway.
Yeah. So you could just work kind of at a local State Farm agency and, you know, put your time in there in order to get educated and then be able to really jump right into an equine agency and be ready to go and learn more about equine policies entail.
Right. Because like when you're insuring houses, you have to have a lot of information, and we have to have that information as well, so that you'd learn how to measure the square footage of a house, figure out how to determine the replacement cost value, because that's certainly not what the person paid for it. It's what you'd have to rebuild it for. You know, it could be higher or lower than what they paid for it. Do you have, you know, we have these computer models that we go through to determine the replacement cost of each structure on a property. So they could start learning some of that with the houses even. So that would be very, very beneficial.
Are there jobs within the agency that you don't have to be a licensed agent to do?
We have one unlicensed individual in our office, and they assist, you know, maybe gathering some paperwork together, but not much, not much. I guess someone could answer the phone and steer it to different places. The caveat with that is a lot of the time you need some really good knowledge to know where that phone call needs to go to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sometimes people just start expecting whoever answers the phone to know quite a bit.
Right.
So we like to have a very knowledgeable person answer the phone so that, one, the phone call goes to the right person if it needs to go somewhere, or even, you know, then that the person answering the phone, which is Megan right now, you know, she can help a lot of people.
Yeah. But
I don't know that answering the phone would be even something I would want a non-licensed person to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking kind of in terms of young people who might be thinking about this, that might look for an internship or, you know, a summer job to see if it's something that they would want to do or want to be around, if there was anything that they could do and contribute.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So besides being a licensed insurance agent, are there other things like underwriters, for let's say, the jobs that people can do to support the agents, like behind the scenes?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we work really closely with claims adjusters and with the underwriters. And claims adjusting is actually a super interesting, like when we see it on our side, it's a very interesting career, because there's a lot of fact finding. There's such an important part of our success, and we work with some really great claims adjusters. They deal with a lot of, you know, you learn a lot about the different injuries. You learn a lot about all the different products that other people sell. There's good interaction with different people. It seems like a really interesting career, and it always seems like there is a need for good adjusters. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just wondering, how does somebody get into being a claims adjuster?
Well, there's several really pretty large adjusting companies that specialize in horses.
Okay.
And they would probably just contact one of them And I know that one of them we work with a lot has, you always see that there are assistants working with the main adjuster, so that there is a tiered program so that they learn that task really well. And of course, they're licensed. Adjusters are licensed, and I think they're licensed in every state they work in.
Oh, okay.
So there's licensing with that, so they'd have to go through that process, whatever that is.
Right.
And I don't know if underwriters are licensed or not, or if they're just trained by the insurance company. That's a good question. I'll have to ask one of our underwriters. But almost all underwriters are not licensed as insurance agents.
Okay.
But they have guidelines from their company for them, you know, that they follow when they're looking at different risks for their agents.
Are a lot of underwriters horse people, though?
Almost all of them. Okay. Most of them are.
Interesting.
Most of them are. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
there are a couple that aren't, but if they are not, they sure have learned a lot about it.
And Laura, having your company be successful for so many years, how have you cultivated your working environment and the atmosphere there for your employees? What have you done in order to kind of keep that ongoing success?
Well, my goal would be to have everybody like to come to work as much as I do. I don't know if that is possible. I think my sister probably would. She loves her job as much as I do. We try to have a very open environment where, you know, we can ask everybody questions. Like if we have an issue, nobody has to take care of it on their own. They ask, you know, if there's something that they don't know how to handle, they ask for advice. Maybe either Carolyn or I will actually, make the call and take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
We have very, very good protocol so that nobody has to wonder what to do. Mm-hmm. The protocol is followed every single time, and it takes the stress out of work because you don't have to wonder what to do in the situation. There is strict protocol that highlights exactly what happens when this happens. Mm-hmm. In over 30 years, we've had a lot of different things happen, so we have a lot of ideas of what to do in each case. So that's very, very helpful. And then we have very generous vacation and PTO time and a very flexible schedule for people. Everybody knows a certain number of licensed agents need to be in the office at one time, mm-hmm. and they arrange their appointments or schedules or something and vacations to make sure that we have those, you know, that number of agents. So everybody takes it on themselves to make sure that, well, I would like to take off this Friday, but I can take off Thursday instead if such and such, you know. So they all work together. And I think by having it flexible and by everybody having a say, keeps everybody really happy.
Mm-hmm. And was that something you set out to do from the start? Or did you have to kind of learn and change?
You know, I've always set out to have that because in the normal work environment that I started in, I didn't have it. And it was very, very difficult not to be able to like get your dog to the vet or not be able to do this or not be able to do that. Or not be able to leave an hour early, even though everything was caught up because of these strict guidelines. And, you know, I don't think that there's any need for that. I think that people are happier and they are going to be much better suited to work here if they can take a breath and do what they need to do. And then they're happy when they're here, and it seems to work out really well, but it's as a result of the very strict work environment that I started in.
Right.
Like, this is not viable going forward.
Yeah. And the protocols that you talked about, you know, in terms of how people do their jobs and what steps they have to take, is that something that's dictated by the insurance policies, or is that something that you've developed yourself?
Well, it's requirements by each company has different requirements. So some of the protocol is required by each company.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of it is just our internal processes on, you know, how we document things.
Okay.
But each company has very strict guidelines on what they expect and what you as an agent can offer at different times.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. So it's kind of a blend.
Yeah.
And do you have a 4-day work week for your employees, or is it just generally flexible?
You know, we've been successful in doing that.
Yeah.
The 4-day work week is, it's dependent on how many years an individual has worked at our agency. And it starts after a certain number of years, you start with a half a day a week off. So they have a 36-hour work week. And then after a certain number of years, they get a full day off. So they have a 32-hour work week. And it's generally the same day each week for each person. But, you know, they also understand that we have to have a certain number of agents in at all times. So that, you know, they'll give that day back or change the day based on, you know, vacations. And, you know, it's vacation season is coming up. So there's a lot of like little puzzle pieces going on right
trading.
Now. Yes. Yeah.
I feel like my brother's like a firefighter and does that a lot. And
yes, you have to have a certain number of people. And so the puzzle gets a little complicated.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny is like, okay, my husband works a full-time job and he's expected to put in 40 hours a week. But if they decide, you know, they don't have any jobs and they're not going to work on Friday, then they extend the hours Monday through Thursday. So they're still working 40 hours a week, but they get a full day of not working. And I find what you're offering your employees to be really generous. And I love that it works for you guys and that you're able to do that and to show that it works and still have success and still make profits and be able to keep everybody happy. Because I don't know, I just feel like a lot of companies are having to go that way and employees are demanding more of that.
Yeah. I think demanding more flexibility for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think by having an all-female workforce, it's really nice to have more flexibility because, you know, kids getting out of school or maybe having a certain program at school where you want to run out and, you know, see the program for 2 hours, things like that come up.
Yeah.
And I don't think, you know, if someone is the main person that's caring for the children or responsible for the dog getting to the vet or the horse tour getting there or whatever the thing might be, because, you know, if a lot of our, you know, some of our employees own horses and, you know, of course they have to be there when this happens or that happens, just like all of us. I think that by offering the flexibility and it empowers women better in the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a vet in California who's set up her practice that way, where she has some full-time people, but also people who want women who want to work part-time because they have kids. And she wanted to give them an opportunity to be able to use their vet licenses, their vet experience and be veterinarians, but not in such a strict, you know, on calls, overnights, and that environment that doesn't work when you're trying to raise a family.
Yeah. And also I think after the pandemic, when people realized that women were leaving the workforce in droves because they couldn't work from home and have little kids at home, or, you know, if the daycare is closed, they couldn't do it. And unfortunately, I think that's what we saw, is like so many women having to choose between their family and their work when the pandemic hit. And to be able to come out of that with ideas on flexibility and for any employee, and knowing, you know, in the horse industry, how many things happen during the day when you could be at work. I love that outlook on it. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. We really like it.
And what's kind of something that you are planning for in the future? You know, knowing you've had your company for 32 years, is what's kind of the goal for you and to keep it sustainable?
You know, we just want to do just what we're doing now. We love it. We want to just keep doing what we're doing. We want to add another person, but that seems to be a constant. We're interviewing, and hopefully we'll find another person that's as good as all the rest, which I'm sure we will, because once you put it out there, they usually come and find us.
Mm-hmm. Have you found that it's a certain temperament or type of person that's suited to it?
Yes, it has to be a very detail-oriented person that communicates well and writes well and has a tremendous empathy and love of animals.
Mm. That's great. I think we've given people so many more ideas on the possibilities, you know, that open up in the industry when they hear about, you know, what you do and what your agency does. And I think it's been really cool to talk to you about that and find that, you know, there are things to talk about and ways to run businesses that we don't always see in the equestrian industry. So that's been great.
Yeah.
Thank you. One reason we like it so much, it's, you know, no 2 days are the same. And it's very interesting. It might be a lot of paperwork, but it's super interesting.
Mm-hmm. Just a random question that we have not prepared you for. Is there any funny story that you tell, with names omitted, of course, that you're like, you're never going to believe what happened and what we had to do to get this horse taken care of?
Oh my gosh. I'm sure there's so many that doesn't come to mind, because sometimes that's almost on a weekly basis. We're like, really? Oh my gosh, what do we do with this? It could be on a weekly basis.
I mean, horses are pretty inventive in finding ways to hurt themselves.
Yes. And, you know, when this happens where somebody will have an exclusion on a policy, at say at renewal, and they're not sure if they want to renew with that exclusion. And, you know, you have to tell them there are a lot of other things that can happen to a horse. Right. I mean, a lot of things can happen. The one that has the exclusion may never be an issue during the upcoming policy period, and we might be able to get it off, but there's still a lot of things that can happen. So, and we've seen that time and time again, where, you know, there might be a lot of issues with the horse, and then it finds something else to do.
Right.
And then the next year, it finds a whole nother thing to do. So, I mean, that's part of it.
I have a story about myself. I had this I had this Welsh pony that I bought for a lot of money for me. She was young, she was two, and I was like, oh, I'm just going to put mortality on her for now. Like, she's not doing anything while she's growing up and it's fine. And I'm cheaping out, not doing the major medical. And what happens? She stuck her leg through a fence and had to go to the clinic and have her hock flushed out for like 3 days. And I was mad at myself for not having the major medical on her. I was like, here I am out here selling it to people. I didn't even do it for myself.
Well, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you, Laura. And at the end of every episode, we ask the same 4 questions to our guests. And Connor starts with the first.
What is one action that women can take to make a big difference in their lives?
Be self-reliant.
Yes, yep, I love that. I
love it. Yep.
And we never even got into all the things that you do outside of work and and your horses. I mean, you're really active and you have your dogs that you love and you go fly fishing, right?
Oh, yes. I mean, hiking and fly fishing and running and my dog. I got new hiking sticks the other day. Yeah. I want to hike from Crested Butte to Aspen again this year. And I'm trying to find someone to go with, but I don't know if I have any friends that really want to.
How long is that?
You go over a path. I've done it once before. You go over a path, and I think it's maybe 12 miles, but it takes 7 hours because you go up to almost 14,000 feet.
Wow.
So it's quite a lot.
Yeah.
I'd die.
I will not be joining you on that.
No.
Oh, come on. I want to go in July. So.
Oh, I've lived at sea level my entire life. I go above.
My sister did it with me last time, and she is a Florida. She's sea level, and she did it, and she was a rock star. Maybe she'll go with me.
I went on a 20-minute hike with Maria, one of our friends that we went to college with. She was a jockey out in California. So part of her exercise was like hiking this mountain. I got to the top. I was looking at my Fitbit. I'm like, I might die. My heart rate is so high. I think I'm going to die right now. Like, you're going to have to roll me down this hill, Maria. What are you doing? Sorry, I will not be joining you.
Okay.
But that is really cool. What would you say is the best habit that keeps you motivated personally?
I would say it's probably not really a habit, but it's a trait, and that would be persistence and perseverance. I like to push myself for sure.
What's your favorite horse movie?
Oh, that one's easy. Something to Talk About. Dennis Murphy's in it. And one of my friend's horses was the horse double in it. Or maybe he wasn't the horse double, but he was the horse in it.
Oh my gosh. That's cool.
Yeah.
Julia Roberts, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And Robert Duvall. I remember that movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they filmed it in Georgia.
Did the riding. Yeah. And Dennis Murphy did the riding, and he was riding one of my friend's horses, Continental B. And I think there was someone else that we know that was in it that was riding.
Yeah. I think Robert Duvall's character was based on George Morris.
An archetype with George in mind.
And lastly, who would you recommend to be a future guest on this podcast?
Reagan Como. He has developed a really great study horse devoted to horsemanship. It's called the Equine Mastery Education System. And it can be, you don't have to be there. She has study material that she can send you.
Oh,
really good.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really, really good stuff. And it's really good for parents of kids that are starting. Mm-hmm. It would be really good for people to have on hand when maybe kids go for equestrian day camp, so that the parents learn a little bit in case the kids get more involved.
Interesting. And does she have that as her main company or?
Well, she's also a horse trainer. She runs a whole farm, and she takes students to shows and stuff.
Yep. Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. It's been so fun.
It has been so fun.
Being with you and learning more. And yeah, I think this will be a really big help for people that may be looking for something new to dive into. And we've given them a lot to go with here.
Good. Good.
Thanks again.
One person at a time. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Tired of searching multiple websites for equestrian products and services? Wish you could browse horses for sale and order supplements in one convenient place? Equivant was created by Horse Girls, who are dedicated to making it easy for fellow equestrians to find what they need for them and their horses.
Equivant partners with small equestrian businesses to advertise products, services, and horses for sale on one convenient marketplace. Shop on Equivant.com to find horses for sale, grooming products, supplements, riding apparel, trainers and vets in your area, and much more. They really do have everything you need for you and your horse. She is just one of the most lovely women I've ever had the pleasure of working with. She's just so easygoing, and you could tell from, you know, yeah, our conversation, how nice she is and how smart she is. And like, she knows everything there is to know about the industry and just like rattle off information and without having to look it up. And it's really cool. And I'd always wanted to have her on the podcast and talk to her, because I knew that, you know, she did have an all female workforce in her company, and she's run such a successful business for so long. So I think it's really cool to talk to somebody like that and kind of pick their brain on how they do it and like, how do you keep going? And I found it interesting that she doesn't consider herself a very goal-oriented person when she's very, I don't know. I think she's very structured, like with her horses and what she does with them and how she plans for them. And like, she bred, I would say, at least 3 of her Grand Prix horses.
Yeah.
So, you know, amazing. Like,
yeah,
you know,
there's structure there, definitely structure.
Some long-term planning there, but I love that, you know, she can kind of live day to day and be focused on what's in front of her too.
Yes. I think this hit on so many different levels, because it wasn't just like about her business, but also informing people about what's going on in the industry, options for them, like in the insurance industry. So we also like helped educate people on how insurance works, so that they might be more informed on that. And then that there's options for people in terms of jobs, to keep them connected to the industry, and that they could make a sustainable career out of it.
Yeah.
And then we talked about her business and how she's built this great business staffed by women, and that she's does it. They have like that incentive to stay long term to get that 4-day work week. It's brilliant. Like, it's such
I love
a
good, that idea. Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, I feel like yourself, there's probably a lot of insurance agents that kind of do it on the side or do it as part-time, and they have some other things that they have their hand in. And I think you could tell when you talk to her like how totally dedicated she is. And I liked hearing about that, and, you know, knowing there probably are opportunities out there to really make it full-time and to find a great work environment. And if not, like, maybe she'll inspire somebody to start their own agency and provide an atmosphere like that, which is really cool. Like, there needs to be more of that, and have those supportive environments that realize that you're a fully rounded person outside of the work that you do.
Yeah. I think I will say a huge tip that she gave was going to work for a regular agency first.
Yes.
To be honest, if I was going to do it full time, that's what I would do. I would go and work at an agency and learn all the ins and outs about insurance in general, and then take it to specialize into the horses, because I think that's a great way to work it versus the other way. You just learn more about the systems that you have in place behind the scenes. So I would say that get your license, go work for a State Farm, learn the insurance as a business, and then maybe look for a place like her business, like Laura's business, to go and work for, where they can probably help you hone your skills even more. But I think that was a huge tip, because I will say sometimes I feel like I struggle that I don't have the background of just general insurance.
Yeah.
You know,
and you also don't have, like she said, you know, they all work collaboratively and help each other and answer questions for each other, or, you know, one person's looking it up while the other person's talking to the client on the phone. And
yes,
I'm sure that makes it a lot easier, you know, when you have that wealth of knowledge behind you and it's not just you on your own.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think that also goes back to like that working environment that she has, the way she's set it up with, you know, they all do collaborate together and help each other, and that 4-day work week, but then also making sure they have people on call over the weekends and putting all those puzzle pieces together. I think sometimes I do think that employees work better that way. I do think that having that collaboration, and then people are more willing to do things maybe outside of the lines.
Right.
I see.
Like, with my husband. Wouldn't you be willing to take overnight calls if you didn't have to work Fridays? Like, if you did to do overnight call on Monday nights,
yes,
and you got all of Friday off every week,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And you got like a month PTO.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like for me, right? I work very differently than, say, the companion animal side people of our company. They go to offices that are 9 to 5. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to track down veterinarians driving around the countryside that show up at horse shows. So my week looks very different a lot of times than theirs does, because it's catching them in the morning for breakfast, or catching them at night for dinner, or catching them at a horse show on the weekend, or going to an event. Last weekend, I went to a horse trials and supported the veterinarians that were there by bringing lunch and cheese and snacks. So I like that flexibility. I like being able to say, okay, so Monday I'm going to do this and then this, because I was at a horse show all weekend supporting the veterinarians that are working at that show, or talking to clients. And I think if my company got really strict about, you know, you have to like work exactly this, it would be very difficult for me to accomplish my job.
Mm-hmm.
And I would probably be pretty upset about it too, if they were very strict about it, and would make me want to maybe not do as much as I do now. I think I go above and beyond a lot in my job, because I carry that brand with me everywhere I go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if you, you know, try and make it easier, whether it's work from home or, you know, being able to always know you can have Friday afternoons off, or whatever it is. Yeah. It does, I think, make people want to work harder. There's studies showing from, you know, major companies that have over 100 employees and that have moved to that type of 4-day work week, and production and rose from their employees.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't take away.
Yeah, I see like some companies where they want them there from 8 until 5 every single day, but then it's a customer-oriented service business, so they're taking calls in the evenings or before work, or, you know, you have to be available when you're on vacation and on weekends. And then like, you have to have some give back to your employees. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, you have to be able to say, okay, if you show up at 8:30 or 9 o'clock today because you've gotten calls since 7 a.m. that's delayed you leaving your house, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Right? Or you had to leave, but you've worked all weekend tracking down shipments or what have you. And so I think that it gets tough when I think that it makes people resent companies when there isn't that flexibility in it, especially post-pandemic, right? I mean,
yes. And I think, you know, recognizing that and finding ways to work around it or to accommodate in the equine industry is going to be really important, you know, in the coming years.
Yes.
For a workforce that is getting old enough to take jobs and come into the industry, and their expectations are different than somebody like us, you know, who 20 years ago were, you know, coming into the industry. And I mean, I don't know about you, but, you know, if you take, and it's probably still the same for the most part, like a grooming job, or, you know, you're working directly with horses, you're probably working 7 days a week.
Yes, and you're killing yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know.
And that's the thing, like, and we've talked about this before, of like kind of taking advantage of young people who are passionate and are willing to give the time, and, you know, they don't have families or kids or a lot of responsibilities. They don't want to buy a house. So yes, they will work for you for pennies on the dollar for 7 days a week. And
yeah,
but, you know, what are you doing to incentivize those people to stay with you?
And, right. And it's hard for the longevity of the sport, right? Because even now, I think that we have really, we do take advantage of people. And then there are like these weird expectations, right? So a vet coming out of vet school does not make that much money. That's why so many of them want to go into small animal, right?
Yeah.
But they want to get paid more. And I completely understand that, because the cost of going to school is so high, but you know, the cost of living is super high too. So on the other spectrum of that, how can you pay your grooms like nothing? You can't afford to live off of what people think is a good salary for a groom.
And they think it's okay because they're providing housing.
Yes. Like, yeah.
I mean, okay, and that's part of it, but you're still like,
even in some cases they aren't. Like at the racetrack, I think there's a real struggle right now for them to find grooms. And it's like, well, I know what you guys are paying people, and you can't live off of that. Not as a single person.
Right. Much less.
Yes.
If you're married and you have kids and pets and horses.
And So yeah, I think that
I think it's going to take a lot of innovation and finding ways to work around that, knowing how grueling the schedule can be for those working with horses. And even if you're not working directly with horses, like if you work for a horse show and, you know, you're working Wednesday to Friday at the horse show, but then Monday and Tuesday they expect you to do like your office work or whatever it is, you know, like there's a lot of people in the industry that do not have those normal schedules. And I think there's a lot of turnover because of it. And
yes,
a lot of people leaving the industry and going to quote unquote normal jobs, for that very reason. And, you know, like you said, your friend who has the vet practice, and finding new ways to, you know, bring in women part-time. And, you know, Laura's found a way to share the responsibilities of the job among people and give them their time. And I just think things like that are going to be necessary. Because more and more people are And I think it's a generational thing too.
Mm-hmm.
Their work isn't their life. And right. you know, they want time for their own life too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think sometimes I was thinking about this for myself. And I talked to my brother about this recently, how I grew up in the industry and I knew at some point I was going to have to make a choice. Did I want to embrace that lifestyle of being a horse trainer and knowing that it's a little bit volatile? Like, you don't know if you're always going to be getting a paycheck or people are going to pay you on time and what have you. Mm-hmm. Or did I want to seek other types of work? And I positioned myself, even though I stayed in the industry, like working at Blue Chip, it was a paycheck that I was getting every week. It wasn't my, I didn't have to worry about billing somebody and finding that out. And for me, that's security to me.
Yes.
So, you know, I think that it is something that you have to look at in yourself and say, can I embrace it? Yeah. I didn't want to. I want to be able to travel. I want to go places. Mm-hmm. That's why I am in the, like, a perfect position now, because there's somebody that can back me up when I go away, take the calls. I don't have to worry about collecting money from people, and I can just go about and I can live a life. I feel like the way I grew up, I had to give up everything in order to stay in the horse industry. Like, I wouldn't get vacations. And and I think that that's hard, because I don't know if that can be changed. I hope it can, right? I hope it that people will go into it knowing it's a bit of a lifestyle, but that they can have some ability to step away from it, enjoy their life in other ways.
I think there's people who have found a way to do that. I mean, you know, even just looking at the hunter jumper industry and knowing, like, the show season is basically 12 months a year now, mm-hmm. where it used to not be.
Right.
There are people who say, no, I'm not doing that. You know, BZ Madden was she's one of the best riders in history. And she, you know, and John made, I mean, from what I understand, a conscious decision to say, our horses are getting time off. They're going in a paddock for months. We are not coming down until we absolutely have to before the winter circuit starts. And, you know, that's how it's going to be. And that's probably why she has such longevity, why she has so much success, why her horses are so happy and they jump so well for her. And, you know, it's, I know it's more than just that, obviously, but you know, it can be done.
Yes.
And, you know, for those who do want to make it 24/7 and want it to be their lives and that's all they care about and it's all that makes them happy, go for it. Like, you can do that too. But I just feel like there's more and more people who need more of a, I wouldn't say balance, but, you know, need something more out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was,
yeah,
a really good conversation. And I think,
I loved her. I loved talking to her. She was great. I think it was super helpful. So, I hope a lot of people get good information out of it.
Yeah. And I always like our post-interview chats too, because we learn more. I'm sure people learn about us more too, but
I'm sure they do. Well, we're going to end today, and you can find the links to today's guests and the show notes at www.eqbusinesswomen.com. Equestrian B2B is out twice a month on the 1st and the 15th.
You can find out more at eqbusinesswomen.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Find Equestrian B2B wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to follow, subscribe, and leave a review. You can have all 20 plus shows of the Horse Radio Network with you wherever you go with their free app for iPhone and Android. Go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network.
Now go plan toward a 4-day work week.